now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Today is the first day of a new feature on Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars, and this feature will be called Voices of the Mylabs. We'll also have another segment called Voices of the Abductees. Today, our first guest will be a Mylab, so this is the inaugural segment of Voices of the Mylabs. Carol is a dear friend of mine, a Mylab and an abductee, who will be coming on the show to talk about her Mylab experiences being used in combat, being used in a variety of tasks, mostly military in nature. She had been taken to the moon. She's been taken to Mars on a number of occasions. She has been under a lot of monitoring, surveillance, harassment. She's endured burglaries where a surgical strike was performed on her personal belongings, her personal papers. So I wanted to kind of tee it up for the listeners and also put out as a warning to those people out there who still have unresolved issues. I know that when Carol starts talking about her Mars experiences, some of the people out there who have come forward with Mars experiences will blow a gasket. A spring will figuratively pop through the top of their head, and they will scream and say, "No, I'm the only legitimate Mars Mylab. I am the only one. Where's your proof, Carol? Where's your proof?" And all this hate, all this abuse, all this outward projection due to unresolved hang-ups, unresolved trauma, unresolved issues. Don't even try that on my friends. It reminds me of the fake Bin Laden raiders. We know that what's really called DevGru, but which the media and Hollywood still call SEAL Team 6, they took part in the fake Bin Laden raid. The helicopter that crashed on the roof was supposed to explode and kill a bunch of SEALs with it. That didn't happen, so they killed them off later on in Afghanistan. And a couple of the higher, or a few of the higher ranking officers began committing suicide and dying in murder suicides, et cetera, accidents. And then two fakes come along who wrote books saying they killed Bin Laden. So you have these two SEALs who claim to be part of a raid that never happened, or it did happen, but we know that Bin Laden's been dead for a long time already, so the whole premise of the Bin Laden raid was bogus to begin with, just like the whole premise of the 9/11 war on terror is bogus. So at any rate, these two SEALs come along, each write a book saying they're the one who shot Bin Laden. So they created this phony controversy, and then one of these frauds would come on to Hannity, and then Hannity's show and say he's the one that shot Bin Laden, the other guy's a fraud. And then the other guy would go on another talk show and say, "No, he's the one that shot Bin Laden. The other guy's a fraud." And it's just another shit fight is what it is. And the whole idea is to push this fake narrative of the Bin Laden raid and, by extension, push the whole fake 9/11 narrative, right? And so we see something similar when someone comes forth and says, "Oh, I've been on Mars too. I've had experiences there." Suddenly, all these other people who claim to be on Mars, they start screaming and pulling their hair out and going into a mouth-foaming rage, Where is your proof? Bring back a soil sample from Mars. I want to see pictures of you on Mars. This, that, and the other. And they're just projecting out all these issues, unresolved trauma, programming. Well, if you're going to go out there and go into teeth gnashing mode because another person comes up and starts talking about Mars, someone who I vetted and trust implicitly and I know to be telling the truth, that's your malfunction. Don't take it out on Carol and don't take it out on me. I've been in this field for 25 plus years. I was debriefing and talking to the original MyLabs. I've had my own MyLab experiences. So if all you Mars warriors out there want to get into battles and arguments and whatever, fine, leave us out of it. I will call these Mars warriors who sling mud at each other, I'll call them fake Bin Laden raiders, because really it's the same thing. The real players don't get involved in these shit fights. They don't sling mud at each other because they look at this from a higher dimensional perspective. They don't look at this from the perspective of a minion, of a mind-controlled slave whose egos have been activated. All right? That much being said, enjoy the interview. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I will be starting a new feature called Voices of the MyLabs, and also there will be a Voices of the Abductees. What I want to do is give a voice to those people, legitimate alien abductees and legitimate MyLabs who are having experiences, have them talk about different facets of the experiences. There's a whole gamut of different types of experiences that abductees and MyLabs go through. Sometimes it's a lot to take on board at one go, so I thought it would be a good idea for a dear trusted friend of mine, Carol, to tell a bit about the monitoring, the harassment, and the surveillance she's been subjected to when that first started, and then fast-forwarding up to the present time. Carol, how are you?
Not too bad, James. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. In the recent past, you've been subjected to a lot of overt monitoring, and it doesn't really matter if you're not sharing UFO pictures.
No.
Carol has come up with some of the best UFO photos I've ever seen in broad daylight. Where she lives, I'm not going to disclose her location, but think of Grand Central Station in New York City or Victoria Station in London. That's what it's like at her house, up in the airspace above her house. As far as UFO traffic is concerned. And she can sit out in her front yard and take fantastic pictures. And sometimes she'll be harassed because of the pictures she's put on. Certainly troll activity will increase. But sometimes when she's not even taking photos and posting them, she still has interference. So Carol, please, the floor is yours. Could you tell our audience a bit about yourself and tell us how a lot of this harassment and monitoring started and how it's escalated over time?
Yeah, well, it started when I was really little. I know that's so cliche to say because it just seems like it's the same old story that everybody presents and brings forward. But it started off when I was 5 and I saw a massive UFO over my mum and dad's house. That's when the monitoring started. 2 days later, we had a knock on the door, and I was hidden. My parents hid me, and I didn't understand. All my family members are from the military and have been and are currently still in the military. And, yeah, since then, it's just escalated. So when it just came in chunks. So that stopped after a period of time. When I was in my early teens, I was followed. And in Europe, at the time, there was no cars other than little Fiats. That was the common car everybody drove. Who followed me? They were in a white Valiant. And I'll never forget them because they followed me for eight months straight. They didn't do anything. They didn't say anything. They just trailed behind me everywhere I went. It just seems like they would pop out of nowhere. So as a young girl, that was a bit frightening. So, and then that stopped, and then everything then changed. My dreamscape would change. My attitude changed. It went haywire. And then everything died down until I was about 30. And since then, everything's escalated. I would sit outside in my house like you've said, and in my backyard I would just sit down and point the camera up and take photos, and it depends what I get. It doesn't matter if I post the photos, I rarely post all of them. As you can imagine, it would just inundate everybody's page if I posted 20, 30 photos of crafts every day. And then after this one time, I got an unusual craft. It was golden, and I had it analysed because I just thought I just needed that extra somebody else to say, yes, that's a craft, that's not a bird or anything else. And I had a really bad experience that night. It's really hard to talk about it because I never had this opportunity to say what's been going on. And
Just share whatever you're comfortable with.
Had this, because it was just so horrific. Just had this experience where I found myself walking on a train platform, and I knew something was strange because that wasn't the first time that I've had that dream that I was on a train platform and hopping on a train. Now, these trains aren't your average silver trains. These are charcoal trains. No windows, nothing. It's all charcoal. And I jumped off, walked across the tracks, and I was helped hopping on a train across the tracks. Sat down, and we took off. This train was filled with men, just elderly men, and that's never happened to me before because usually all filled with young girls, young guys. It's all a mix. And within about a few minutes, I saw a bright white flash. And I then found myself within a few minutes hopping off the train somewhere else, and I was dressed completely different. I had weapons on a holster on the belt, and just walking, and I just walked into mayhem where I was getting attacked, beaten. I was killing these huge cyborgs, let's call them that, that they had faces of birds, long beaks, but they looked, some looked like birds, some looked like reptilians. And then after I had to do what you had to do in order to survive, because I've had this before, I did what I had to do, and a guy turned to me and he said, grab this device, and it was like a mobile phone, and he goes, and press this button, and that would kill whatever's going to come to kill you. And I'm thinking, this is just too crazy. So after that, I woke up, refreshed my face, went to wash my face, went back to bed, and I dreamt of something else, and I was pulled into something else. When I woke to, I had a mark on my arm, and it was like a needle, a round kind of bruise. And you could see in the middle part where it was kind of like a square shape. And I thought, well, that's really, really strange. And I do remember some kind of device, like a wand, was being attached to my arm. So whether they took DNA or a blood sample, I don't know. I have no idea. So I took a deep breath, thought, okay, took a photo of it, get on with my day. And that's when the monitoring started. My phone started beeping every 2 minutes. My mobile phone would flash. I thought, well, that's strange because it's never done that before. Took it to the shops to get it looked at, and there was nothing wrong with it. When I received a phone call, it started beeping every 2 minutes. And then I had helicopters fly overhead. It's all normal. I get that on a constant basis, even at 2 o'clock in the morning. But the most strangest part was a white van was parked on an angle so they could see into my lounge room, and just how they had the windows and this metal nozzle sticking out from the side of the truck was very, very weird, very, very strange. And they stayed there for 24 hours. They came and they walked through my yard. They had a look up above my house, told them to leave. They just didn't say anything, looked at me like I didn't matter or, you know, that I was in their way. They went back into the van and they left for about 10 minutes. I then went to get the kids, and before I knew it, they were behind me. So they followed me into town and everywhere I had to go. Came home, they went the other way around because I thought they would be clever to think that maybe I lost them or something. But they just swung around the block and re-parked their van across the road. I've had that, and then just been followed non-stop since I had that really bad experience where I had to kill people and the strange, really huge cyborgs, and it was just so full on, and being beaten and just waking up with all bruises and ringing in my ears and just really bad flashbacks. And that's when the monitoring, and it has not stopped since then.
You had one experience, I think, that either you remembered it as a dream or you remembered it as an actual experience the previous night, where you're walking along a dark road, and then come the next morning you have a broken foot or a broken ankle.
Yep. Yeah, oh, that was an actual experience that I remember. It wasn't so much a dark road. I had this experience where, because a lot of my experiences are like military-based, and a lot of it, and it's strange because sometimes, you know, like I'm in a big shopping mall, and I have this one particular person, he's always there watching really closely, really intently. I've gotten to know him extremely well over the years. This hasn't happened, you know, for a year or two. This has been a good 25 years of my life of having this same person in my dreamscape. And I've come now to know that he is some sort of general, or he does train me because he has said so in the past. And I was in this mess tent sitting on the table, and I had one person that I know in this reality, in this, you know, he was a friend. And he turned around to me and said, right, get him. And it was like a trigger. And so I was made to fight this person. And as I was kicking and doing all these kickbox moves, though, I wouldn't even know how to do that now. Wouldn't know how to do it. I've no interest in that. And woke up with a broken ankle. That healed, I have to admit, that healed so fast. I couldn't believe it. I had x-rays and went to the doctors, went to emergency to get it x-rayed and looked at and had it operated on. I had two fractures and a broken toe, and it was just a mess. And they said 6 to 8 weeks healing, and I healed in about 4 to 5 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, really fast. I don't understand how that is to me, how that is possible, but it's possible it happened.
You've also gone on experiences that are familiar to those that know about stargates and jump rooms. You've gone to facilities, or rather been taken to facilities, and then you would enter into what appears to be a stargate and wind up somewhere else. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I had this experience where I found myself in a really dark tunnel. I'm walking along, and then all of a sudden, there's a guy there, and he wears this hideous brown suit. And I said to a friend of mine, I just can't believe someone of this day would still wear a brown suit like that. And that's what made me recognize him each time. And I thought, oh, that's really strange. So I'm walking down this really jet black corridor. You can't see anything. And he would come up then behind me and say, oh, I've been waiting for you, Carol. Come on, put this on. And he'd give me this white coat. And then all of a sudden, I find myself in this room, and it's just a strange room. It has strange symbols, and all of a sudden we're just going down and down and down and down, but it's just so quick. But you know in your mindset, at the back of your mind, that it's like six or seven levels or eight levels.
It was like an elevator or something, or some kind of tram or something?
No tram. It was an elevator. And it was a really strange elevator. And when I spoke about this prior, I was just gobsmacked that something like that could ever really exist, because I thought, well, is this a dream or is this an experience? And then we'd come to a room, and then all of a sudden that would stop, and I found myself suspended in the air, and I had these strange snake-like, is it rope or was it a cord? I don't know. It was attached to my ankles, and I was suspended up. And I had a lady who had brown hair in a ponytail, white coat, and she had a clipboard. And I wanted to move, and I thought to myself, I really have to go. I don't want to be this. Am I a guinea pig for something? I do not know. I can't remember, because it started off just very normal. And then she turned around, she said, if you move, they will bite. And I said, they're cords. How can they bite? I want down. So when I did move, it turned and that bit me, and I woke up with two dots on either side of my ankles. But I do remember when I did hop down that these concrete doors, and I've had multiple dreams of being in rooms that were made out of concrete, and these doors were so thick, absolutely so thick. I just couldn't believe how thick it was, and just trying to push them. They were pretty easy to, like, push open and close. But I just remembered those little tiny details of the strange elevator going down, wearing, you know, like a lab coat, meeting and greeting this person, and the concrete doors, concrete walls, everything so thick, and just seeing separate rooms and people in these rooms. I used to see, like, children in the rooms. So it's pretty a horrific thing when you talk and you go and you think back, wow, you know, this happened, that happened, that happened. So each time something happened, I would have something physical to say, yes, it was real, and I would document that and I would get that looked at.
The rope that later on bit you in one of the experiences, were you suspended upright or were you hanging upside down?
No, I was suspended horizontally.
Oh, like flat on your back but in midair?
Flat on my back in the air, yep.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I was just like, oh, I need to get off, I need to get out. Because you just have that feeling and that sense of, you know, I have to go, because if I don't go, that's it. And it's like, what are they doing? And then when I did wake up and I saw that I had two bite marks on each side of my ankle, after probably about a week, my vision improved. I don't need glasses anymore. And I thought, something's going on. Like, I just don't understand how people can have, or someone can have, an experience, and then in your real life, things would improve.
Yes.
Like vision, health. Your hearing, your sight in the dark, my sight in the dark now is just phenomenal. People call me a bat because I can just see in the dark. And I'm just like, I don't understand. And I got told by a friend of mine that my eye color has changed dramatically. Yeah, I don't get it. But apparently, yes.
Now, in that room that you'd spoken of before, where the Stargate was there, like, steps leading up to the Stargate, or was there a ramp leading up to it? And when it was powered up, what did it look like? And what did the room look like?
See, it was a square room. And we're all sitting, like, on the in this one room, and just through just one wall. That was an experience, like, way back. So there was this one wall, it just opened up, and it was, like, a nice light blue, and a swirl, and we just got sucked in. There was no ramp. I don't recall a ramp or steps or anything like that.
I've heard of similar things. In other words, you were just sitting there, and then the whole room became...
Yeah, we were just sitting.
Yes,
yep.
That's what I've heard,
not
too.
Not the whole room, just the one wall. Like, there was me, another guy that I knew of, I don't know him personally. He has been in and out of my experiences for probably about 20 years. So it's a shock to me when you, you know, Facebook comes along or whatever, and you see somebody, and then you have that a little bit of a rapport before things happen, and say, "I know you."
Mm-hmm.
So he was sitting across. There was probably about four on each wall, and yeah, all of a sudden the wall just and there was like blue, and it just sucked us in. There was nothing else in that room apart from us, and everything just sucked that whole wall. It was just amazing. I'll never forget that, because that was just probably one of my first introductions of Stargate, and I ended up, I don't know, I can't say 100% where I was. I just know it was lush, and there were steps going down into the water. Yeah, it was all very forestry-like, and it was really nice. And that one, another experience I had, that I was on the moon, and I was on the moon with a particular person. I did see, because they give you that, these little, you know, you can see stuff and you remember certain points of every experience. And I do remember these huts or little houses that had flat white roofs and everything was white. And I looked up and I went, gee, the Earth is really close to the moon. And it's like, that was really, really bizarre to see that. And I'm not sure why I was there. But I know that I was there.
Were you inside of a installation looking out, or were you on...
No, I was actually in the atmosphere, on the ground, out of the house or hut, whatever you want to call it, and looking towards Earth.
Uh-huh.
And I thought to myself, wow, Earth is really closer to where we are than what they say. And that's what I took out of that experience. It was very quick.
What did the Earth look like?
Really close.
Uh-huh.
Much closer than, you know, like when I woke up and I thought, oh, gee, that's really strange. Are they lying to us and saying that, you know, we are X amount of thousands of miles away or whatever from the moon? I don't think so. Because, you know, you're there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will tell you when they have the experiences or they remote you that they would say, this is incorrect, we are actually closer than what they say. And that's what I got from that. So whether it was them telling me that I was correct in my theory or whatever and saying, I think they're incorrect, I don't know.
Did you have some kind of breathing apparatus or a helmet or
no.
None?
And no.
Did you see if you were beneath a dome or were you like in the atmosphere?
No, in the atmosphere, out in the open.
Wow.
You can breathe on the moon.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yep. You can breathe on there. Even Mars, you can breathe on Mars. You don't need an apparatus.
Could you tell us about what memories you have of being on Mars?
Yeah, my memories of Mars. I do go there a lot, actually. I'm more willing to go there than anywhere else. I think they use me for that. But just like the scenery and everything, it's very lush. It's very different to what people think that it looks like, because I know that it's not what others have said or... You know, how they say, oh, it's just barren and red, and no, it's not. I said it's very lush and it's very green and it's like a gorge. If you've been to a gorge and you see these amazing rocks and all these trees sticking out, and it's very much like that. And when I do stay there, because sometimes in my experiences I stay at a place for a month or two at a time, because when I wake up, I know that my nails have grown or whatever, and that's not possible because I keep them quite short. And I'm always in a mess tent, and I'm always with the same person, how I spoke to you about that certain person who has trained me, and he's always watching or very close, and he won't move far from me. I think one time we were separate, and he just couldn't get to me on time. And I saw the devastation in his face at that point. But Mars is very lush. Anybody who says you can't breathe there is a liar, and that's my experience. And I would even take a lie detector test and everything to say that it is how other people and how I've, you know, what I've heard from other people, that it is lush.
How many people have you seen there when you first
there's so many, James. I thought to myself, oh, okay. But there seems, like, at one stage, there seems to be hundreds of them. And they're all dressed similar. This is not, you know, like everybody is not dressed like casual. Everybody that I see always have black on. Or when I see this one particular, I mean, oh look, I'll say his name. His name is Joachim. The guy who trains me is Joachim. He's like a 4-star general or whatever. He's been training me. And every time I see Joachim, he is always got khaki pants on or black pants and a black T-shirt. I've only ever seen him once in full military uniform. But everybody else, he's always in black. I've never seen not one breathing apparatus. I've been on those black pods. I know that I was collected with Joachim, and I had 3 other guys in this black pod. It was all black, and the dome bit on top was made out of really thick glass. The sky was blue. So to me, and I know, because when I go there, and when I land there or come there, however I get there, he always says, welcome home.
Uh-huh.
So it's just, to me, like, more of a home to me than anything else. There was one incident where it threw me off and I didn't see anything. And I think I spoke to you about it. It was an experience that I had, that I was going down some steps and these steps were going into water. But onto my right side, I had all these ancient temples, and they were weird shaped, like they would be really tall triangles, rectangles, and they were very, very ancient and had hieroglyphs on them. And I was just walking past all these temples, and I was walking down the steps into the water, and then all of a sudden the water disappeared and I was somewhere else. So I don't know whether that's how I come to and fro and I walk. I just don't know, but I just know that it's breathable, it's lush and it's green. And there are some parts where, like everywhere, there are mountains with, you know, no trees on them or whatever, but it's no different to here.
Well, I actually have in my possession a copy of the front page of an American newspaper, and it showed, this was when the Viking lander, I can't remember if it was Viking 1, I think it was Viking 1, had landed on the surface of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
The picture that was sent back and was put on the front page of the newspapers, the sky was blue.
Mm-hmm.
And for that part of the scenery, that part of the terrain, it looked no different than, say, Arizona or inland Australia or New Mexico. It was, it looked like a blue sky. And what they've done, yeah, folks, is they've added this red sky in a lot of the imagery to give it this woo-woo, dead planet, nothing exists there kind of,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing. But it's quite the opposite. And the now defunct Joseph P. Skipper's website, Mars Anomalies Research website, which was a phenomenal website, but it's been taken down. The imagery that Joseph P. Skipper's came up with, you can clearly see a canopy of trees, a forest, folks.
Yep, a forest, yep.
Forest, a canopy, mm-hmm, of trees. You can see all kinds of vegetation. It's not a barren, dead planet. Now, did you see any other life forms there, alien life forms, non-human life forms?
Yeah, the non-human ones, the cyborgs. And like, because it just jumps. One minute I'm serene and peaceful and it seems like, okay, this is the downtime, walking through beautiful forestry, down the, you know, stone steps, and I'm with other people. And then when the next minute I am dressed differently and I'm at war and I'm fighting all these things. And like, my current experience was fighting this hideous, huge cyborg, and there's no other word to describe this thing, but he was coming after me and he was coming fast. And some of them, like I said, had bird-like beaks, and some of them looked like full-on reptilians, but they were massive, James. They were like 8 feet. And this old man, I'm like, what are you doing? Just run. You're going to get killed. And he's just looking at me, and he goes, but, you know, and I said, no. And he handed me this device and he goes, you have to use this and press that to get rid of that. And I'm like, what? I go, no, because I'll just say it because there's no other way to say it. But I just used to jumping, kicking, karate chop here, there, and just slicing the throat and just walking over it and just go, okay, next. And that's what they use me for. It's horrific to say. I've only just now told a dear friend of mine who is similar to me of what I actually do. And I said, I don't have, you know, your fluffy ET experiences. That's long gone since I was a little kid. It's all changed since I was 14. I go, it's full on. And now in my age where I'm at now, it's just escalated. I thought, you know, by the time I get to where I am, that'll just like die over and they won't use me anymore. But it's just like, no, we're going to use you more now because everything within me has changed. And that's what I was doing. And since then, the monitoring is just through the roof. Like when we were setting this up, James, and 5:10 today, my phone rang and I said, oh, okay, answer it. And I heard nothing. And then there was 2 beeps and then I just get the goodbye. And I thought, you know what, bugger off.
When you go into this combat mode, do you feel an energetic shift and a personality shift? Or
absolutely. For days on end, I would kick your ass. I'm just that type of
Oh, please. But you know, we're all adults here.
But that's what I'm like. I'm just like, don't fuck with me. I will slit your throat, walk over you and go eat lunch. Do you understand? And then it takes me about a week to just calm down and go back to where I was. And I just do believe. But prior to that, little things would happen to aggravate me. Just fighting with the other half. Kids being more naughty or being naughty when I know that they're not. So the aggression would be build up. And it took me a while for me to, you know, think, oh, my gosh, like, wow, why am I so aggro? But now I know why they do what they do and now I know why I am the way I am. But it just takes me a while to, like, go back to the nice Carol and nice and calm. And
I've spoken to other MyLabs who've had to similarly learn how to decompress. One of my other guests that's going to come on in a couple of weeks, a gal named Sashida, she is a MyLab, and she's had a lot of reptilian experiences, and they use her, quite frankly, for a lot of wet work. They use her to basically take people out. And, you know, when she's in that mode, and I've known other female MyLabs like this, they're very much in assassin operative mode. Another friend of mine that I want to get on the show one of these days, I've known her for many years, and at the start of her MyLab training, she was an abused wife who was being beaten by her husband. By the time they got through training her, her husband was terrified of her. She would be out playing paintball with the boys, and they would say to her, because they had no idea what the kind of training she'd been through, you know, you might want to wear more protective clothing and yada, yada, yada. She goes, don't worry about me, guys. I can take care of myself. And then, you know, she would just wipe him out. And just pain wouldn't stop her. Nothing would stop her. She would go into this operator mode. And so I've seen that before.
Yeah, it's very like, for me now, it's just second nature. It's just what I do and how I cope with it, and I just move on really fast. But I do have, as one would probably put it, multiple personalities, because I would be, you know, mummy and then, you know, wife, and I would have that. But in a split second, that's it. When they're ready to take me to do whatever, such horrific things, and I've done such horrific things, like you said, as that girl has done, and they use her for that. They use that for, you know, they use me for that as well. But I don't really like talking about it, because then it just puts me in that mode again, and then I know. But just a few things happen, and you just switch. And like I said, the past couple of days, I just couldn't handle it anymore. And all the monitoring, and the phone calls, the weird phone calls that, you know, no one says anything, and then the robotic voice would say goodbye, or they would say, Mama, hello, goodbye. I'm like, Mama, what? So that's really weird, and that just gets me on edge. And it's just like, well, no, they use me because of, you know, like growing up overseas and being through what I did. I think that was my whole training.
Seems like they were well aware of you from an early age. There was something about your DNA profile, your morphic resonance field, whatever the case may be, that made you of interest to them.
That's right. Like, without going into great detail, like I said, all my family is in the military. And all that I knew all had UFO experiences, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had come to know, or I've been told of, three of, you know, grandmother, great-grandmother, and great-great-grandmother. They were all psychic. I was then told that during World War One, that 33 members of my family were slaughtered, and they were trying to eradicate my actual family. And only three survived because they went away. They were hunting or fishing or something. They weren't there at the time. And they went somewhere really far. And it just phenomenal. And when, even to this day, after all these years of trying to get answers, I've been threatened. And, it's just one of those things that there is, you can't get an answer from anybody.
What have you had to learn to do to decompress? When you come back from these ops and there is a combat military element, and then you find yourself back in the mundane world, you're back being a housewife again, you know, in order to avoid kind of allowing the people and things around you to upset you, what have you had to learn to do to get back on an even keel?
Meditate. Meditate, meditate, meditate. I just had to. And plus a good cry doesn't go astray either. But I just felt like, you know, after all this, I just have to calm down. How do I calm down? Pace the house? Yes, done that. Doesn't work. Gets me more aggravated. And I thought, well, how can I take some power back and say, okay, you've taken me for that, and I hate it. I hate you for it because it's just so bad and it affects me. Until to this day, it's really difficult. What do I do? Well, I have to meditate because then I can lower my blood pressure, which goes really, really high. Like, I suffer from it. It's all from this. And it's like 160, 170. Being on tablets doesn't work. So I meditate. And that's how I slowly bring myself down level by level to by level, just boom, 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 and I come back down. It's like peeling, you know, the onion, and you're taking all these layers off. That's how I do, and I see myself one layer off, another layer off, see her, until I see Carol again. That's the only way I know how to cope, other than crying and sitting in the shower with the water running, going, oh, my gosh. Why? Why do they do this? So that's what I do to cope, and I write everything down.
Now, you've been on the receiving end of very surgically precise burglaries, haven't you not?
Yes, I did have one major one. One major one that to this day I've had no help with the police. They were useless. Everything in my house was trashed. My fridge was tipped over. The television was tipped over, but not enough to do damage to it. And I thought, oh my God, what? I went to drop the kids off to school, came home, and in that time, and I went to do some shopping actually, and in that time, they had enough time to do what they did, and they took, I had 26 journals that I wrote since I was probably about 15 years old. My dad told me, write down, just here's a book, here's a paper, pen, use this to write down your thoughts or whatever. Whether he knew or not, I don't know to this day, but I'd write down everything, and all of them were taken apart from three journals. And I thought, well, why didn't you take all of them? And why did you take my journals and nothing else? And then I went to onto my computer and all my photos, videos. I had a diary in this on my computer that I had all swiped. I just sat down and cried. I thought, how does this happen? I don't understand. Because, you know, being a busy mum, you just don't have time to sit and you do the research. So I miss out on doing research, talking to other people. And now that I do have that kind of little bit of time to do that, I have come across similar stories where, you know, certain people would go in and just take certain things, and it's just, it blew me away. And it's taken me a long time to put pen to paper, and it's very difficult now. And I've had
I'm
no
sorry
help.
Sorry you had to go through that. That must have been
yeah, it was horrific.
Horrible. Yeah, horrific.
Because it's like, I don't understand how quick, and that there was no fingerprints, there was nothing, so I just felt massive violated. I just felt violated in such a massive way, because I thought to myself, here's me shutting up and not saying anything to anybody, and I get emotional, and I keep it all to myself, and they do this. And then I thought to myself, all right, I'll open up and I'll try and get my story out or whatever, because it's totally different than everybody else's. And everybody in the sense of, you know, ET experience and everything else. And then you just get, you know, slammed with all this rubbish.
Yes, Carol has been on the receiving end of trolling, of harassment, of people saying that she's a hoax and a fraud. And this, as far as I know, this has been the first time that Carol has talked at any length about her experiences. In the past, she'd put up the many photos of the UFO activity above her house in broad daylight, also of orb activity and whatnot. And even that would garner all this abuse from so many people that it was just unbelievable, really.
Yep. And every time I would tell them, especially if they were local to my area, any time you want to come, bring your camera. And you're most welcome to come and see what happens around my house. You know, there's a lot of people that have said the most bizarre things. And who are you to judge? That's their experience. And if you are, you know, not wanting to understand or even to have compassion about something that, you know, you don't understand, then don't hurl abuse.
Yes.
It's just
unless you've walked
simple.
A mile in that, yeah, unless you've walked a mile in that person's shoes.
That's right.
There's no way for them to know.
And not, you know, like I said, I'll be willing to take anything, any kind of test to tell people and for people to know that I'm not making anything up, because who would sound this crazy?
Yes. And what Carol had mentioned earlier, I'd heard from others too, where it's not so much, and I suppose that the Stargates and the portal devices may not all be alike. Some could be traditional portals where people have seen, like Sasquatch, walk in and out of portals, and reptilians walk in and out of portals out of closets, and the military increasingly uses personal-type portals. But I've also heard of these rooms where people just sit in this room, and then the whole thing does this kind of shift that just kind of phase shifts, and they wind up in some other place. So they don't actually walk through a Stargate. The whole room is a Stargate.
The whole room. Yep. And it just sucks you in. You're just sitting there 1 minute talking and kind of giggling because you don't know what's going on. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're somewhere else. Even. And that the same color that's nice, that really ultralight blue color, that even happened that, like in the train, I saw the same color and it was like picking up speed so quick, and then all of a sudden, boom, this big bright flash, and it was the same color as in the room that I was in all those years ago.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, now there was an individual that's no longer in the field. He's rather infamous for, well, he was a MyLab, and he actually boasted at one time about being used by the military to go and kidnap people out of their rooms, out of their homes at night.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of went off the rails because mm-hmm. of, I don't know what the details were, but do you want to tell that story?
Yeah, there's a... Oh, I don't know if I should use his name or not.
Oh, you don't have to, but he's infamous in
yeah,
my lab.
Yeah, he's a
project,
bit naughty.
Project
Let's
people.
Put it this way. Look, he,
Project
I know circles. 100%, and I know that a lot of other people who know this person would say when they know him personally, he is the most sweetest. He's like a little boy, and he's very coy, and he is truly... I don't care what anybody else thinks about him, but he's such a sweet, sweet man. But there's a side to him like everybody else, and once it switches, boom, he's the most evil asshole I ever come across. And he is, he's the one that comes to, he has come into my bedroom. For some reason, he always picks the bedroom. And at once, there was one incident where I had a friend over my house, because my house is a little bit haunted and not many like the feel of my house, but I adore it. She came over, stayed over the weekend, and she saw this particular person walking down the hallway into the bedroom. And she just, it took her aback a little bit because, you know, you don't expect something like that. Once she left, I had another friend stay over, and I had to go to sleep because I just needed, we were just up all night, and I just thought, no, I need an hour nana nap. And I was dead
yes.
asleep, and Rod was in the lounge room with a couple of other friends, and they saw that same person my friend saw screaming at me at the end of my bed telling me to get up. His words were, get up, soldier, get up. Move it, move it. And he was screaming, and they heard it. They came running into my bedroom, and no one was there.
But they saw him walk down the hall.
Yep. They saw him walk down the hallway. Not all the hallway. There's part of the hallway where people tend to see things walk, and that goes directly into my room. And they saw him. And I said, don't worry about him. I can deal with him. I've seen, you know, him or somebody who looks exactly like him in town following me. He's been right in my face. I'd be dead asleep and I'd just wake up and just get startled because you feel like someone's right there and he would be right there. So he's a bit of a menace, but I don't think that he consciously knows he's doing it. To the point of messing him up so badly
yeah.
that he's now paying the price for that. And that's really sad.
It is sad. And so, like I've said before in some of my commentaries, like there's a lot of hate directed at Miley Cyrus. Oh, look at her. She's such a skank. And no, folks, she's a monarch
that's
girl.
Right.
The poor kid was abused in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
The poor kid doesn't know which way is up. So, you know, I have compassion. I have, you know, sorrow for these people because they've never been allowed to just grow up and have a normal
no.
life. And like this individual in question,
mm-hmm.
he's been, let's say, in detainment for some time
right.
now, but that doesn't stop the MyLab controllers.
No.
It actually makes it easier
exactly.
if the person is locked up somewhere.
Absolutely.
Because then they just take them and then, you know, even if the person is under CCTV surveillance,
mm-hmm.
they can easily, just the way they manipulate time and can screw around with
yeah,
you know, technology.
Exactly. You won't see it.
You won't no. see it. It's so easy to take him out, utilize him on ops, and put
absolutely,
him back.
Absolutely, James.
Mean,
they have him where they want him because he
yeah.
is that easy now to control and manipulate, and he has no idea. You know, I don't know why it's directed at, you know, and so many women would say the same thing. Probably, I don't know why, I've never met him or whatever, but I know that I have. But I've never, you know, come out and said all this before because I just kept it all to myself, and very few people know my life from start to finish. Yeah, it's a very sad thing. Like, I saw even an interview about him that he was in, and he was talking, and I just sat and cried, because I just thought, you know what, that is so wrong. So wrong, from watching and listening to what the other person was saying and what the other person did. I think he was pretty much a handler in him going to where he is now. And I just stepped back from all of it, because I just don't want to associate myself with people like that anymore.
What we've come to find out is that there are some people in the field that, you know, they're just so unscrupulous in many ways that they can say one thing and do another. They can, you know, say terrible things about you. There's people out there that are pathological liars.
That's right.
And to hear the things that come out of their mouths about Carol, about me, about others,
it's ongoing.
Well, it's ongoing. It used to piss me off. Now it just makes me laugh, because I'm just glad I'm not a hosty person like that, right? But this is one of the things that happens when people are in the field, or even on the fringes of the field. Now, Carol is right in the midst of it. And for a long time, she bit her tongue, so to speak, and did not talk about this. But that didn't stop the harassment.
Right.
It didn't stop the monitoring. It didn't stop the surveillance. So in a very real way, by Carol coming on here and finding her voice and speaking her truth and speaking from the heart, she's putting all these controllers and whatnot on notice. Like, you know what? It's like, you may knock me down once in a while, but I'm going to keep getting back up, and there's nothing that's going to stop me from doing what I need to do. So I really thank you for your courage, Carol. It's an inspiration to me, and I really cherish this friendship that we have. I've learned so much from you.
Fine.
And, you know, a lot of things that you've shared with me, you know, verify some of my experience.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this, folks, without going into too many details, Carol and I have seen each other in these experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've seen each other long before I started doing a podcast, long before I moved and lived in Australia, came over to Australia. So the MyLab syndrome is truly worldwide. One can come across MyLabs in these experiences, and in real life, so to speak, they live clear across the other side of the world. But you may see these people sometimes frequently in your experiences again and again, because they seem to be part of a team. And in the few minutes we got left, Carol, did you usually operate solo, or did you sometimes work with a small team when you were sent off on these
ops? Sometimes it was a small team, but usually I'm on my own. Usually, like, Joachim will bring me in and take me into these missions and go, right. And he'd, like, say a word, and I know that word's a trigger, because everything changes. As soon as he said, get it, or he becomes really mean. And I just said, don't talk to me like that. And we have this, you know, rapport where now it's like, you talk to me like that, I'm going to throw you off the pod. Do I make myself, you know, I'm not doing it. But, like,
Now this pod you refer to, is that a conveyance? Is that a transporter or something?
I've been in it many times. And, but usually I'm by myself. But this time was different, and there were so many. But they were all male. So what the hell was I doing there? But I know why. Because I can be just as aggressive, and I can be just as nasty as the most trained assassin out there, because I've been like that all my life, since I was a little kid. Absolutely, and I know that for a fact, that's why they go, see ya, off you go, do it yourself, because they know I can just do the job, I don't need anybody. And that's a really scary thought, and I'm like that, it comes into my real life as well.
There is some bleed through, I can vouch for that, because one time, and I'll name at least one of these other MyLabs, and I was with Niera Easley, and an old MyLab buddy of mine. We came down from Denver to the bottom of the state, Colorado, and hung out with Niera. If those of you listening, you might be familiar with Niera's story. She was a MILAB in the Air Force. She was taken to the moon base, or one of the moon bases, in a craft piloted by a reptilian. She was in her stint in the Air Force. She had a lot of missing time. And at one stage, she was tasked, along with a number of other radar specialists, to sit in a hut in the desert and then see if the radar equipment could pick up the close approach of about 20 UFOs. Whether those UFOs were piloted by humans or piloted by ET, she didn't know. The craft got within 100 yards of the hut they were in. Nobody was allowed to talk to each other. Everyone suspected everyone else of being OSI, which is the Air Force Stasi Gestapo, so to speak. And then afterwards, everyone was put into a bus and brought back to a base, if memory serves, Area 51. And then they were all given injections in the neck and then made to forget the whole thing. Anyway, Niera and I and another MILAB buddy, we went to this brewery, this restaurant brewery in the town that Niera lived at. And we went to the back patio where people were partying and drinking and whatnot. And the way we positioned ourselves in the back of this establishment, in this open courtyard area, we had the best possible view of the establishment, who's coming in, who's going out, where the exits, where the entrances were. And we all sat with our back to the wall, but we were facing the crowd, and we were facing the establishment. So it was an automatic thing where we get around these other MILABs and we kind of switch into MILAB operator mode, so to speak. And so, you know, we're clocking who's coming in, who's coming out. We're sizing people up. It was just something that, and Niera was the one that pointed it out. You know, me and my buddy were just doing this naturally because we'd hung out so much back in those days. But Niera picked it up right away that, just look at us, we're all in MILAB operator mode.
Yeah,
you know what
funny.
I mean?
That's really funny because that happens to me. And it's just like, oh, my husband would like be, and I'd like, you know, when I meet his friends or whatever, I just turn on general on them and suss them out. So I do understand how you know, people can switch so quick and you just suss people out and you generally judge them right on the spot.
Yeah, and then we go by energy, we go by body language, we go by demeanor, we go by eye contact, lack thereof, eye movements. It's interesting, and I've spoken to many other MILABs. They've said the same thing. Well, thank you so much for coming on
You're
to the
welcome.
Show, Carol.
Thank you, Jane.
Yeah, and we'd love to have you on again sometime, and please stay in touch. If any of this other stuff starts happening, please just let me know, and you know, we can talk it over and see what's going on. Any last words, any last advice you want to give to those who find themselves in these kinds of ops?
Just don't be like me and keep your mouth shut. Just talk about it as hard as it is. That's the one big mistake I did, was not talk about it, because that's when you become even more of a target and you become easy prey for them. And I think, you know, the more that you talk about it and note things down, the better handle you'll have and a better grip you'll have on the situation. And, you know, you win that way. You might not feel like it, might not look like it, but at the end of the day, you are winning. So just speak about it, because the more we speak about it, the less power they have.
That's right. When we speak truth
That's
to
right.
power, when we find our own voice and we can stand tall knowing that we're in the right and we're speaking the truth, and that in itself is a victory. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Carol. All my dear listeners, wherever you may be, have a very pleasant time. You've been listening to this week's segment of Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars, and we will see you this coming Saturday in Australia and Friday in the U.S. and elsewhere. We have a very special guest, and I'll surprise you who that will be later. So have a very pleasant time, everybody.